Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers Journey Through the Wormhole with Quark, Dax, and their good friends, Tom and Harry. Join us as we make our way through episodes of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Your hosts for today are my fellow Trek actors, Armin Shimerman, Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, Garrett Wong.
For the complete and exciting version of this podcast, check out patreon.com/the Delta Flyers and sign up to become a patron today. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello, hello, hello.
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 How is everybody?
Not bad.
Yeah, Armin, good. Armin went to a wedding this weekend of a mutual friend of ours, and I'm very jealous I wasn't able to go.
It was a lovely, lovely wedding. These people had been dating on and off for 30 years.
I know. A long time.
Is that the actual number count, Armin?
Actually, it's 31. 31.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, they had a ceremony after 31 years.
After 31 goodness. Years, and it was well worth waiting for. It was a wonderful.
Yeah. He's so his name is Steve. Steve and I were on a soap opera in New York City together. And then when I got on the soap, I needed an apartment at that time. So Steve asked his landlord if there was an apartment, and there was an apartment right below him, same exact apartment available on this 5-story brownstone walk up. So Steve and I lived above and below each other for
a few years. John Ali.
John Ali was also, not in that apartment, but John Ali was around for sure. Yeah. Small world.
I did not know that was your connection.
Yeah.
This is an old connection, Robbie.
Very old. It? I was 19, 20 years old. Yeah. I've known Steve. Yes. A long time.
What's the age difference? How much older is Steve than you, Robbie? Would you say?
Well, I'll be 60. I'm 60, so, and he's 64?
Yeah, that's close.
Okay. So, something like that. Maybe 4 years.
You know what? He's
4 or 5.
I know him to be a little bit older.
Yeah, okay. I think so too.
Because he said something to me recently, so I know him to be a little older.
But was he your young mentor? At heart.
Was he a bit of a mentor to you? Or no?
A little bit. We were very good friends. And another mutual friend of ours, Bob Gentry, who's passed away, had a country house, and Steve and I would help build this, renovate this country house. So we'd be out in Bridgehampton all the time helping Bob with his house. And so we were kind of, I think Bob was more of a mentor to Steve and me.
Okay.
Then. Yeah. He was an older gentleman.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And Steve and his fiance, Amanda, have gone on long hikes with Kitty and I in England and in Italy.
Oh,
in fact, a hike in Italy, I thought they were going to break up for good in that one, but obviously I was wrong, and I'm happy to say I was wrong.
Well, you were at Cinque Terre, right?
No, we were in Amalfi.
Oh,
in Amalfi.
There's some very terrifying hikes on the Amalfi coast.
Yes.
So I can imagine.
There's a pathway called the Pathway of the Gods, and in order to get to the very top, to get to the Pathway of the Gods, you have to literally scale rocks in a mountain with the sea hundreds of feet below you, straight down.
Yeah.
And
that's terrifying.
And this was terrifying for Amanda, and she made it. She, God bless her, she was very heroic, and she did it. And I have great respect for her for having done it, not giving up. But Steve was trying to be helpful, and he was not getting anywhere with that. So,
but
they had a beautiful, wonderful, loving wedding, and I had a great time there.
Oh, that's awesome! Yay!
It all ended up a happy story. I love it.
Well, we've got some birthdays to talk about. A couple birthday shout outs. First of all, Paul Johnston, February 13th. Happy birthday, Paul.
Happy birthday, Paul.
Happy birthday, Paul. Oh, also, boy, this is a popular day, everybody. We also have Lee Lyle on February 13th. Happy birthday, Lee.
Happy birthday, Lee.
Happy birthday, Lee. We also have Rich Gross on February 13th, this popular day. Happy birthday, Rich.
Happy birthday, Rich. What happened 9 months before the 13th?
busy times.
Happy birthday, Rich.
Happy birthday.
And finally, we have on February 16th, our good friend, Holly Smith. Happy birthday, Holly.
Holly, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Holly.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, let's jump right into our poetry synopsis with Robbie doing his limerick of Life Support.
Here we go. Barial shows up in a bit of a mess. Kai Wynn wants diplomacy to progress. Jake and Nog have a fight. Barial won't be all right. Kira's going to have to deal with a grieving process. There you go.
You rhymed process with mess and progress. I got it.
Okay. Thank you. Very Shakespearean of you.
Thank you. The iambic pentameter of this poetic musing.
Enterprise, yes.
Enterprise.
Yes, sir.
Oh, my gosh.
How's your haiku?
Yeah, let's go.
Let's do it.
Here we go. Barial injured. Bashir, Dr. Frankenstein. Kira says goodbye.
It is Dr. Frankenstein.
It is. I never thought about that.
Oh, yeah. And it's funny because when I read, I did my haiku and then I read the old Memory Alpha, entries. And sure enough, right on the beginning, story and script, the original pitch for this episode by Christian Ford and Roger Soffer was based on the 1818 Mary Shelley novel Frankenstein with Bashir in the role of Dr. Victor Frankenstein. The story, though, it concerned a Federation ambassador involved in peace negotiations with the Romulans to disestablish the neutral zone, whose shuttle is damaged and who dies in the sick bay on Deep Space Nine. However, the treaty negotiations are at a pivotal moment, so Bashir is able to figure out a way to reanimate the ambassador's brain, essentially bringing him back to life. However, over the course of the episode, he begins to go mad, and in the last scene, Bashir is forced to allow him to die once again. The reason this idea was scrapped was that the producers felt that the audience wouldn't have much sympathy for a character whom they'd only just been introduced to. According to Ron Moore, we were trying to make it a Bashir show, but in reality, everything focused on the ambassador. Nobody cared about him. Now, this is very interesting. The solution to the problem of the audience apathy was to make the ambassador a character whom the audience knew and cared about. The producers considered changing the role to O'Brien. Colm Meaney was rumored to want to leave the show to concentrate on film work, but he assured the staff he had no intentions of leaving. As such, the producers gave the story to Vedic Barial, mainly because they weren't happy with how the Barial Kira relationship was going and because they weren't sure where the Barial character was heading. Can you imagine if they killed O'Brien in season 3?
Wow.
No, and... that's interesting. I didn't know any of that. That's fascinating. And it might explain Cullum's ability to go off and do films whenever he wanted to. I went off to do TV whenever I wanted to. But that might explain what they must have negotiated something where, okay, you stay, but we'll give you the leeway to leave when you need to.
Yeah.
That is fascinating that... that they were close, like considering a storyline that would kill them off. That's crazy.
I'm always impressed with a show that kills off one of its series regulars and has, and doesn't have anything to do with negotiations. But that's very brave and very bold. And what happens in this episode is in that vein, not quite in that vein, but in that vein, because Barial is an important.
At this point, he's been deeply established, and that relationship's a big deal. So,
And I feel bad. I didn't know he was going to die, so I feel bad that we've been poo-pooing on their chemistry this entire time.
Don't feel bad.
We're not the only ones.
Okay, good. All right.
How's our etymology?
Yeah. Oh, did you want to go through? Yes. Let's do that, please.
Life Support is the name of the episode, and unfortunately, there isn't a lot of drama or theater to either of those words, but I did look them up in the Oxford English Dictionary. So life is from the Old English lif, L-I-F, And it means continuance or prolongation of animate existence. Not very exciting. Support is from the old French, from supporter, to endure without opposition or resistance, to bear with, put up with, tolerate. That's one definition. Two, to endure, undergo with fortitude, or giving way. There are 12 different definitions of support in the OED, and I
Wow.
decided not to give you any more of them.
Okay. That's interesting, though, that supports, you said something about assist without resistance or
That's
something.
right.
Did it say that?
Yeah.
But there is resistance in this. Like, there's conflict in how to support Beriah, which is interesting. Life
Right.
support. Yeah.
Support is one of those words that has subtle different meanings. I believe, I can't remember. I remember reading an article about one word in the English language that has more different definitions than any other,
Oh,
but I think support is getting up there.
yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
Story by Christian Ford and Roger Sofer. Teleplay by Ronald D. Moore. Directed by Reza Badii. So we have
Yes.
Reza coming back to direct another episode. Now we have guest stars Philip Anglim again as Vedic Barayo, Aaron Eisenberg as Nog, Louise Fletcher as Kai Wynn, Lark Voorhees as Leanne, Anne Gillespie as Jabara, Andrew Prine as Terrell, Eva Losath as Riska, and Kevin Carr as Bajoran. I gotta be honest, it's funny because when I saw Lark Voorhees, all I thought was, oh my God, it's Lark Voorhees. And I thought, Saved by the
Who is
Bell.
Lark Voorhees?
Lark
Oh,
Voorhees was
S
a series
Saved by the
regular on
Bell.
Saved by the Bell.
Oh, how
And
funny.
yes, and then and so the all these actors are my contemporaries, right? So and then I saw, I looked up Eva Losath. She only acted for 4 years. She's from Chicago, and in that 4 year time, she was a guest star in nine different TV shows, and then she left Hollywood. And then she went
Wow.
back to Chicago,
Wow.
and she's a realtor there. But one of the shows she guest starred on was Saved by the
Saved
Bell.
by the, I
So
was
I
about to
thought,
say,
hey,
Saved by the
that's pretty
Bell.
cool.
That's
And then I wanted
funny.
to share this very bizarre story with both of you, which I think probably may never have happened in your acting auditioning lives, but maybe it did. But I do recall my agent calling me in 1993 before I booked Voyager, and he said, here's the deal. Whichever actor makes it to the Saved by the Bell casting office first gets the role. I said, what? And so all these actors just rushing through through LA to get there. And of course, I didn't make it there. And someone got there way before I did. But has
Good.
that
So,
ever happened to either of you where they said something as arbitrary as that?
no,
No.
no.
So it
Only
was an
you.
under five, right? So the casting director saw photos of, I don't know, five people and called their
Right.
agents. Yeah, you tell your clients one of you five is going to get it. We don't care who, just get there. So, so
That's
that's
say much
funny.
for the casting department of that show, does it?
No,
Or the
no.
producers for that matter.
No,
Well,
didn't do a lot of, yeah.
Lark Voorhees, I just did a little Google search. She was left out of the 35-year reunion of Saved by the Bell, and
Oh no.
she was excluded from that, which
That's
is,
very
man,
odd.
that's sad.
It is sad. Is she still acting according to what you're looking at, or no?
I don't think so. I
Yeah.
don't think so.
Let
Okay.
this be a lesson to people that are listening. Oftentimes, when work isn't available, or something happens, or you move away, or you get married, or something like that, your career just stops. And
Yeah.
there's nothing wrong with that at
Yeah.
all. And you just decide, I don't want to go through, forgive me for using this Latin word, the mishigas of having to audition, worrying about whether I got the part, of only getting work once, twice, three times a year. That's off-putting, and eventually you come to your senses and you say, I don't want to do this anymore.
So true.
Yes.
Well
I can
said.
relate to that feeling today, Armin.
Well, well said. All right, on
Yes.
that note, I'm going to jump into the first scene and let Robin
Yes,
take a little bit of
please.
a break. Yes. All
Please.
right. So we're in the promenade, and we catch up with Jake, who runs into an old acquaintance we've never met before. That's Leanne, played by Lark Voorhees. And you know, immediately I was like, "What? Lark Voorhees was on this show?" And this adds to
You really
another.
watched, did you watch Saved by the Bell?
Did I?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
You
I didn't, not
did?
religiously, but I saw episodes of it just to keep up with whatever shows were being cast at the time.
Oh, I see.
Yes. Yeah.
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 It was well after my
Your time.
watching shows like that. Yeah, I do.
Yes.
I mean, I know of the show, but
Yes.
yeah.
But yeah, but she was, you know, one of the regulars on there. And
That's
immediately I
funny.
recognized her because she is one of my
Yeah.
contemporaries. And I was so excited to see her. And I kept
Yeah.
thinking, I'm so jealous of DS9. They got all the good
They
guest
got all
stars.
the. You did get really good guest
You
stars.
guys
We did.
did.
Yeah,
You
you
really
did.
did.
You did.
Okay. So he bumps into Leanne, and Leanne and Jake have a bit of a conversation. They talk about a past dinner they had over at the Klingon restaurant, and this information leaks out that Leanne is no longer dating Orak or Orak, whatever her boyfriend's name was at the time, and now she has eyes for Jake. So
Yes,
she
she
asked
does.
if he has any plans for tomorrow. Evidently, he does. He does have some plans with Nog to go play Dom Jot, but he's very quick to say that I can cancel those immediately.
Yes. Yeah.
Done.
Nog,
Yeah.
Nog who?
Nog,
I
Nog who,
think
exactly.
Nog who?
And let's not forget the really beautiful tracking shot at the very top that
Absolutely.
starts at the top of the second level of the promenade, pans down to the ground, then comes back up to the upper level, and then pans down to the lower level. Oh, really nice camera work.
Yeah. Yeah, very
Agreed.
impressive opening shot for sure. I remember Jonathan Frakes said to me when I was shadowing him and observing to direct, Jonathan said, just remember two things. Your opening shot needs to be really beautiful, grab the audience, do something cool. And he said, the last shot, remember the showrunners' names come up right after that last shot. So you want the last shot to frame their names beautifully, and they'll bring you back.
Oh my God.
And I literally have thought about that. But it's kind of true. Like if it's a pretty shot and then their names come up, they're going to be like, I like this person. I like, yeah, that was a good
Subconsciously,
up
they're thinking
subconsciously.
that. Yeah. So, as
That's
opposed to being the first one at the audition, the important thing is to be that
the
the
last.
last shot must be
Yes.
beautiful.
Must be beautiful. Yes.
Look at
Yeah.
those. Look at the
Well,
words of advice from him. It's
look at
amazing.
this
Yes.
episode. Sorry to spoil the
Yeah.
ending, but the very last shot is that beautiful pullback
Yes.
in the
Yes.
infirmary.
And the names, bam,
And
right
then
there.
the creator's names, right? That's why Reza came back quite a few times.
Reza, you smart man. I love
Follow the
that. And I
rules.
must say, for Reza, he loved the actors in this episode. Oh
Oh,
my God,
good.
he
Yeah.
lit them.
Yes.
Not, I don't know personally. I don't remember,
Oh, just the
but
way he lit
watching the
them.
show, the way he lit them, the way he
Yeah.
framed them, he said, "I these actors are wonderful, and I want to spotlight them." And
Yeah.
they're just beautiful headshots of all
Yeah.
these people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
Well.
very well shot, the
Agreed.
whole
What
episode.
I like about this opening scene from a language perspective is that Jake totally commits in saying the Klingon word,
Gah.
gah. Yeah, he
Gah.
gahs. He
Yes, he does.
gets a going really good in there.
Yes, he
So,
does.
and that's the way you have to do it.
The end of this scene, we see suddenly Odo running out of security
Yes.
with O'Brien and some security team, and they bust past Jake and through the crowd. I love the way that that was shot and the timing and the execution of all that. It was exciting.
It was exciting, but I got a little bit confused because for a second I thought they were running after Lark Voorhees because she went the same
Oh,
way.
she
And I
went
was
that
like,
way.
what? You're
Oh.
sending two Bajorans and two Starfleet security personnel after a little girl. I mean, what's happening here? So it confused
Saved
me
by
a
the
little bit.
Bell. They
Say,
watched Saved
but
by the Bell too. They were excited to go get her
they
autograph.
wanted to get that autograph. That
Yes,
selfie
yes.
was there. Well, they're running. Where are they running to? They're running to an airlock, basically, because there's a
Yes.
Bajoran transport that has had an accident. And it's very serious. And when they get there, this is what I don't understand. Why aren't they wearing some type of respiratory devices with all that crazy toxic smoke and everything?
Smoke and
Yes. I was like, don't they have like something to put on? But no, they didn't have that. But when a door opens, we see not only we I don't think we see Do we see Kai Winn first? No, it's another Bajoran, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Another Bajoran well, coming out. Bashir and a nurse arrive. They meet. Yes. Bashir and a nurse show up and meet them. Then we see a female Bajoran come out first.
Yeah.
And then Kai Winn
then
comes
Kai
out.
Then Kai Winn, yeah. Who then says, help the Vedic. Yeah. Then we get to see Vedic Morale with some type of chest wound. It looks like plasma burn or something. Yeah. It doesn't look good at all. Mm-hmm. He's unconscious. And they weren't able to. They also explained why they couldn't beam them directly to the infirmary because of all the radiation that's going on inside of that shuttle. But it's hardcore serious. Odo does reach out to Kira saying, you need to meet us in the infirmary, Major.
Kira's new haircut. Let's talk about that.
Let's talk about that right now. Okay. What do you
think? I was like, what? I don't know. I like her older haircut. I don't like this haircut as much. It felt like she was doing the touring company of Peter Pan, the musical.
Either that.
It felt a little bit like
either that or she was doing her impersonation of Will Wheaton. Because it looked a lot
same
like.
Same style.
Yeah. Same sort of Wesley Crusher kind of. Combed over thing.
I like it when it was a little spikier or whatever, a little, you know,
more volume. Yeah,
more
this is
volume.
A flatter hairstyle is what we're looking at. It's different. I don't have a problem with it, but it's just I think we have to get used to it.
Is this going to last a while?
How much longer?
Do you remember,
Armin?
I apologize for not remembering what Nana's hair looked like 25 years ago.
How dare you, Armin Shimmerman? Lord Shimmerman, we asked you a question, and your answer is
sorry.
Oh, all right, that's all right.
Well,
but
hopefully
you're not a fan.
I don't feel like I've seen a lot of photos of your cast with this haircut, so no. I'm guessing it's going to
disappear. Startle me when I realized. Wait, what's wrong with her hair? Not wrong, but what's different?
What's
with her hair?
Different.
I'm wondering. It looks like it's a more no nonsense hairdo. Would that have been a request from Nana saying, look, stop fussing over putting curlers in my hair and stuff. I just want to.
There were some actors on our show that were very adamant about what their hair looked like.
Okay.
I don't know if Nana was one of them.
Got it. Well, we'll have to ask her that when we have her on next time, for sure. She'll give us an answer, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How did you feel about your hair, Armin?
My hair was terrific. I thought, it's not this episode, but it's coming close to this one. I actually had surgery done on my nose, and it
in
was
real
all
life.
Black in real life. And towards the end of the third season, and it was all black and blue. And it was right. I had it done right the last show before Christmas. And so I had all of Christmas all the way to the first week in January to recover, but it hadn't really totally recovered.
Yeah.
But then they put the prosthetics on and nobody could tell the difference.
Oh,
Was that okay though with the healing?
Luckily, the hard part of the healing was done during Christmas.
Good.
So the pain, the discomfort, all of that was done between the 25th and the 1st of January. Mm. So that and as long as Karen was careful about putting the prosthetics on, which she always was, there was no problem. So nobody saw the problem.
Did you ever have kind of a related question? Did you ever have anyone like break a leg or a foot or an arm?
A nose? Yeah.
Was that you? Or
no? Marco Lima had his nose broken in the last episode by Avery Brooks.
Oh wow! So it happened on the show.
Yeah, and then there was a time that if I've told the story before, people forgive me. It's one of my favorite stories. It was winter. It had just rained. Nana was coming out of the makeup trailer. She slipped on the steps.
And the pallet? Or the steps?
On the steps. The metal, little tiny metal steps.
Yeah.
And she slipped, and she hurt herself, and they took her to emergency. And she was still wearing the prosthetic of the Bajoran nose. and the doctor said, oh my God, we have to fix that immediately. And Nana said, it was obvious he was thinking he had this new complication that would put him in the medical books because of the nose. and she said, oh, my side hurts or whatever the pain was. And he said, no, forget about the side. Look what happened to your nose. She said, doctor, that's a piece of rubber.
That's funny. That's very funny.
Goodness.
Wow.
It is very funny.
I was just thinking back when I was working with Steve Caffrey on a soap opera. I broke my foot on a holiday trip. And so I had a cast. And so the way they dealt with that was that I would be standing behind the couch for a scene, not really moving, or I'd be sitting with my foot under the coffee table and I wouldn't really move. So I don't think anybody in our cast ever had a broken bone or cast a
Tim
cast.
Russ was Tim Russ injured himself.
He did?
Did
Yeah.
he? He had a horrible sprain from playing pickup basketball at the Y, and so he was relegated to staying behind his counter, his
Yeah.
station the entire time. They never
Oh,
brought him out.
yes, I remember that.
Yeah, he
Now,
messed
yeah.
himself up pretty bad.
Did anything like that happen on your show that someone
Well,
got hurt?
Nana got pregnant, and so they had to hide her pregnancy for a little
Oh, yeah.
bit.
Oh, Roxanne.
But no, I don't remember. And again, remember, we were separate stories after a while. It was just
Yeah.
separate stories. So it might have happened and I wasn't aware of it. I don't think anyone really got hurt
Yeah.
that I remember. I didn't hear
Okay.
any stories about that.
All right.
Okay. We are
Well,
back in the infirmary,
yes, we
and
are.
we are now with O'Brien, Sisko, and Kai Wynn. So O'Brien's giving a report on what happened. There's a molecular fracture in one of the warp plasma conduits. It gave way. The whole relay system exploded. That's why Brielle was injured. Wynn immediately thinks it's sabotage. O'Brien doesn't believe so. And then Kira asks, why would you suspect sabotage? And Wynn says, well, I would prefer to discuss this with emissary in private. So she only wants to speak to Sisko. And Sisko's like, okay, let's do that.
When she said emissary, I forgot that
That he
that's what
was the
she
emissary.
calls. Yeah. So I was like, who's the
Who?
emissary? She's going to call the emissary? Who's that again? Then I realized, oh, it's Sis.
Please don't forget.
Okay,
Please
good.
don't forget. No.
Okay. I'm sure it's going to be, we're going to come back because that was in the pilot, right?
Ask
So
me no
yes.
questions, I'll tell you no lies.
Okay. All right.
We're in the operation, or I guess this is the OR, right? This is their little
Yeah, this is
operation.
OR. Yeah.
Yeah, the
The
OR.
outfit. Can we
Now,
talk about the
yeah,
outfit?
let's
What the hell?
Okay. Do you remember there was a David Cronenberg film where everyone wore red scrubs
Yes.
like that too? I don't know
Yes.
the name of it, but that's what it reminded me of. I'm like,
Dead
whoa.
Ringer, wasn't it? Dead
Yeah,
Ringer?
I think that's what it was. Yeah.
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 What did you think?
I thought they were pretty silly, actually.
They seem silly. And they have red gloves on. Why would you
Okay.
do an operation when you can't see? Like whatever liquid, blood, whatever, like you would want a clean, neutral palette on your hands to make sure you're not contaminating one thing to another. You would have a mask on your face for germs. I
I
don't
was
know.
thinking the flip side. I thought, wow, how ingenious. In the future, they don't make scrubs the color that we're used to. They make it the color of blood so no one gets worried. It's always going to be like
Is Bajoran blood red? I don't know.
don't
Like
know.
Vulcan blood is green, right? So, and Bolian blood is blue. And
I think we may have
I don't
seen.
know.
Okay, Kira's been punched
Well,
around and beaten. So
when
when she's.
Barile came out being
There
carried,
was
it
red
looked
there.
like it was
There
red.
was red there.
Okay, so red.
So I'm going to say red.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So you don't like their outfits.
I don't like their outfits. Barile's dying in this scene, though.
He is.
Bashir tries really hard. The nurse says cardiac arrest. They
Yeah.
try compression, whatever those things are called, electrical
Yeah. Shocks.
shocks. Yes, that's what I'm thinking of.
A friend of mine just had that done to him,
Oh my
and
gosh.
he said it's not a horrible experience because it only lasts for a nanosecond, but it's a shock to the system. And he said when it happened, all he saw was blue light. And he asked the people around him, the doctors and the nurses, "Did you see that blue light?" And they said, "No, we didn't see anything." But he saw a blue light. And
Interesting.
they shock Baral twice. So
Oh,
that when he
yeah.
says we can't do this. I think Bashir says we can't do much more of this to him. And
Yeah.
I said, yeah, after listening to what John had to say about it, yeah, you can't do that to
You
him.
can't know. It's very serious when you pull out the paddles.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, they try that. It doesn't work. His arterial pressure starts
But I noticed,
failing.
excuse me, I
Yo.
noticed he still yelled clear. I thought, oh, they're still doing that.
They're still there.
Clear.
Yes. Hundreds of years in the future.
Clear.
Yeah, synaptic failure happens. They apply direct neurostimulation to the brain.
I thought we went straight to the Kira scene, but no, we go to the commander's office at this
We
point.
go to
Is
the
that what
commander's
happens? Yeah.
office. Yeah.
Okay. This is an interesting scene because this is really, we're in the commander's office and it's just the emissary and Wynn. Mm-hmm. But did you notice something was off a little bit with Louise in this scene? Because I just, when I was looking at her close up.
Makeup? You mean like?
It just seemed like, you know, it seemed like her face seemed a little
fuller.
Fuller in terms of retention of water, like that, it just seemed like a little bloated. That's what I was going to say. A little bloated, and there's something was going on. It almost felt like she was phoning it in a little bit compared to what I'm used to seeing. Oh. Then I was reading in these notes, and I found out that she was extremely ill during this episode.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And so let me just
maybe
read
you
this
picked
little...
up on that.
Yeah. Yeah, I picked up on that entirely. But the note was very surprising because it says, oh, I'm so sorry. I had this 1 second. Yes. While shooting her scenes, Louise Fletcher was extremely ill with the flu and had to lie down between takes. Between
wow.
takes, Robbie.
Wow.
In the same
wow.
setup. So not between setups or
sequences,
scenes, but
or, yeah.
in the actual yeah. take of one scene, she had to lie down. So she was that ill. And
Poor thing.
And the entire monologue, and she has like a monologue basically in here. It's a lot of her dialogue, a lot of exposition. And every time I watched her talk, I thought, oh, something's going on. And then I read this. And I said, oh, I see.
I don't know why, you know, Star Trek was never very sensitive, in my experience, very sensitive to people's illnesses as a company. They were like, you know, suck it up. The show must go on. We've got a tight schedule.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like if she was that sick, just take that whole day, put it down a week later,
move it,
and pull something else up. Like,
thank you.
I do this all the time on my shows with people get sick or something happens. I don't know why.
Now, I know Louise. I knew Louise before she was on Deep Space Nine. In fact, I'm slightly responsible for her being on the show.
Oh, wow.
More on that later. But knowing Louise, who is a very quiet and private person, she may not have told anybody before she got there that day.
Oh, I see.
That she was ill.
Yeah,
that makes
that could
sense.
Be true.
Yeah.
She was a very strong-willed woman. And a good friend, a very good friend.
Yeah.
I've got artwork in my house that Louise sold me. So it may be that she just didn't tell him.
Didn't
so
tell
when
him.
She got
That's
there.
True. That's true. Yeah.
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 Well, I mean, the whole conversation here is basically exposition about how her and Barile, and it was really Barile's idea to reach out to a member of this Cardassian Central Command so that they can talk about final peace talks. And this has been going on for months. Barile has been spearheading this movement or this idea to have this peace treaty signed, and he's integral to it. So his being injured is a huge issue. Sisko basically is surprised. He's like, wow, I'm surprised you would even consider such a bold vision of peace to Bajor. But that's when Wynn says that, well, Barile's a huge reason why this is even happening. Mm-hmm. And without him, these talks may never resume. So this is the scene to establish the fact that without Barile, these peace talks are going to go down the toilet.
Yeah, Sisko even comments on, you've grown fond of him. You know, I'm surprised. And she says, well, I'm not sure if I would have done the same thing if the shoes were reversed.
Which is a very nice thing for her to say.
Yeah,
as Wynn. Yes, a very nice thing for Wynn to say. Mm-hmm. She realizes she can be, you know, hard to handle. And and she admits to that. Yeah.
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 Okay. We, I think, go back to the infirmary now.
Yes, we're back in the infirmary.
Bashir is giving Kira the bad news.
Mm, yeah, so Bashir gives the bad news to Kira, who, how do you two think she took it in that
reaction? She was in shock, I think.
Okay, you're going
to
say
shock?
I think
she was shock. She wants to go back to work. She's like, well, I've got to go.
Yeah.
Go back to ops. And she was like, I don't know if you should do that. And she says, I'm going to grieve in my own time and my own way. So I think she was a bit in shock. In
right.
The scene.
Right. Okay.
Because clearly later on, spoiler alert, later on, she's got a lot of emotions about it.
Right.
But in this moment, it just took her by surprise. I
guess I'm influenced by the fact that we watched that prior episode and where everybody was kissing on everybody. So I almost felt like it was not.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, I thought
like,
it was non.
She's relieved. Yeah, she can move on.
Yeah, in a kind of like, well, you know, things happen. It didn't seem like she had that much care, but I maybe read that wrong. So
I think it was
I think you did.
To me.
I think you did. I think you did. I think it was shock. And,
okay.
And Nana's too good of an actress to have not realized this is what she has to play. And that the lines were such that I'm going back to work, so that's the way I play this. I'm going back to work.
I agree.
I have a question. Did they have the red stuff on in both scenes, in the scene where he dies and the scene after where they okay,
The autopsy?
the autopsy, they were in the red as well.
I think
I don't
so.
remember. I don't remember.
I think he had the red on for a lot of it. I liked when he took the red cap off at one point. I thought that was,
He pulled something out of
yeah, pulled it
pulled it
out,
out.
and that made it feel less costumey to me. It was like,
Less
oh, it's
Halloweeny.
functional. I see it tucks in.
Okay.
Well, yeah, he's back in this operating theater preparing for the autopsy. Bashir then sees a neuron fire on the scans. A brain, there's brain activity. Ryle says he's been in stasis, so maybe they can reactivate his brain. If they can do that, they might revive him. And then there's sort of this time lapse of trying all these electrical stimulation techniques. Finally, it seems to work. And Beryl's eyes open. And yeah,
End of
he's
scene.
end of scene.
Well, what do you think of that? Right at the beginning of the autopsy, they put that what looks like what the NFL would use to protect their quarterback's noggin, but whatever that thing was, that halo was so bizarre looking. There's a little small note about that. Jim Martin designed two major props for this episode, a brain scanner and a brain operator. The scanner was a small, lightweight device which would be placed over the head. The operator was a large device which enclosed the head apart from a small opening at the back. However, when Martin saw some of the dailies for the episode, he was amazed to see that the scanner was being used as the operator and vice versa. Director Reza Bedi could not figure out which was which, so he took a guess, and Martin thought this mix-up was hilarious. So
That's
that
funny.
is funny. That is funny.
But I think Reza made the right choice. Like to me, the clear thing seemed like a scanner, that that's how he got the information. And then later on, the smaller thing seemed, yeah, that made sense. I liked
For you,
Reza's
so it
choice.
didn't bother you that.
No, not at all.
All right, good.
But before we go on, again, another nice shot. There was an extreme close-up of Beryl's hair, and then as we're just gra then we just pan slowly over his face, and then we see the slightest of tremors in Beryl's eyes, that indicating there's a life there. I really like that camera shot a great deal.
The
Yeah,
composition
much
was good.
tighter shots than normal
That's right.
on Star Trek, on your Star Trek or our Star Trek. We typically didn't go super tight. I remember when I finished our series, Voyager, and I went on to direct Dawson's Creek for the first time, I was really surprised. It was very unusual to start doing these tight Dawson's Creek close-ups because we never did them on Star Trek. A close-up in Star Trek is like this, but on Dawson's Creek, it was like this, you know? So it was,
Is it because the actors, forgive me, I don't mean to be a mean in any way, but is it because the actors are prettier on Dawson's Creek than they were on Star Trek?
I think it was a bit more kind of melodramatic. It was all about feelings, that show. So much of that, you know, those soapy shows are about feelings. Whereas in Star Trek, there's great prosthetics. You don't want to go in on an actor, on a character, an alien like this when you
Don't
can
hide
see
it.
the whole
Show
thing. You can see the
everything.
grayed
But
out
Reza
thing.
did in this episode.
Yeah, he did.
It was almost always like that.
Tighter than normal, for
Yeah,
sure.
tighter than normal.
I wish we had had him on our show. I really do. After seeing a few of his episodes here, he's really good. Later on in the infirmary, Bashir has accomplished this miracle. Wynn seems very grateful. Beryl's very weak, but he's also grateful. He's been brought back to life. Wynn wants to continue these talks. She doesn't want to lose the momentum, but Bashir says, nope, too much. And she says, no, Beryl doesn't have to go do the negotiations. She'll just be advising me. I'll do all the negotiating. And then she wants to send this coded message to Legate Tyrell, invite him to come and continue the talks. And then when they leave, Kira and Beryl have a moment, a private moment where they talk about spring ball, which I thought was very sweet. And doesn't he say something like, oh,
You'll be playing with a dead man. You'll be playing with a dead man. And she, the advantage, she says, I'll have an advantage.
That's what
and
it was.
Says,
yeah.
Right. And he says, because you'll be playing with a dead man. She says, no, I've been in practice.
I've been practicing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very sweet.
It is very sweet.
I feel like there's more chemistry in this relationship when he's dying than when he was alive.
You just spoke the obvious.
To be honest. I mean,
sorry.
No one is arguing with you.
No one's arguing with you.
Okay.
I want to bring up something that from the last episode, though, Robbie. In the last episode, and this refers to when they first get to that airlock and they're coming out of the Bajoran transport.
Yes.
You said every time a character coughs, they die. Is what you say? What you said?
Oh, I did say
remember that. Yeah,
and he and coughed, kept, right?
Oh, they're all coughing when they come out. I said, "Oh my gosh!" According to Robbie's rules, yeah. Kai Wynn's dead too. Then they're all right, gonna be dead. Right.
They're all gonna die. Well, somebody dies. When there's coughing, somebody's got.
Someone
die.
Dies. That's what it means.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like this next scene when in Sisko's quarters, Nog comes to see Jake. He's excited because of this Dom Jock game with these Tyrellians who brag about how good they are. But Nog's super excited. But Jake says, you know, there's been a change of plans. I've got a date. Love Aaron's performance here. He's like, oh, this is great. Talks about some rule that women are better than money.
Yeah, it's his own personal rule.
His own personal rule.
Money is money, but women are better.
Yeah, and Jake's like, is that a rule of acquisition? No, just my personal rule. I like this whole story was fun to me. I like this one.
Yes.
Nog wants to know who his date is. Yeah. Nog just assumes, oh, you've made a date. So
one of the things while watching that scene, I was slightly reminded just for a moment. That's a scene between a 16-year-old boy and a 32-year-old man.
Yeah, was Aaron, how old was he? He was like
30. No, he wasn't. Not then, though.
Yes, yes.
Are you sure?
I bet he was.
What year is this now? What year is this episode, guys?
This is, I don't know, 94?
95.
95.
Okay, so...
he was older, for sure. I mean, we can parse the math, but he was significantly older. It was a 16-year-old and a...
And a 27-year-old.
And an adult.
30-year-old. An adult, 27-year-old.
A real adult. But yet, Serac is so tall. Serac is like 2 feet tall, you know? Yeah. So it doesn't, even though Aaron's 10 years older or whatever, it looks like Aaron's
he's
the
younger
little
one.
Kid.
It looks like, yes, Nog is the younger kid. There's a shot later on where Jake is talking to Odo. Now, Renee probably, if I remember correctly, it's either he or Avery, was the tallest person on the show of the series regulars. And yet there's a shot where it looks like Jake is taller than Renee. And I don't know whether that's just the way the camera set it up or whether actually at that moment he was taller than Odo. I don't know.
It could have been. Yeah. If you drop the camera down below eye level, suddenly whatever's in the foreground is going to appear taller than the distant person. So yeah, it could have been that, but I notice how much
he's sprouting up like
grown in the last season. Yeah, it's shocking.
Well, even that very first shot in the promenade, you see how lanky he is when he's walking before he bumps into Leanne. We're like, who's that basketball player? Oh my goodness.
That's exactly what he was. Yeah. A basketball player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Nog wants to go on the date with him, wants to know who his date is. Jake tries to explain that it's a private date, but Nog just is not listening, doesn't get it. Nog invites himself along.
The best part is at the end when Nog says, just promise me you won't do anything to embarrass me, which is foreshadowing for the next scene, for the date.
It's like coughing.
It's like coughing. Exactly. Whenever you say, don't embarrass me,
something's going to happen. Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. It's very clear. And Nog ends the scene by saying, this will be great. Maybe I'll even wash my lobes. And so that's the end of that scene. It's so funny.
I hope he washes his lobes on a regular basis.
Yes.
That takes time to wash those lobes.
Yeah. I'm sure there are special gadgets for doing that.
Lobe washing gadgets? I love it.
I'm sure there are.
I'm just imagining a Ferengi beauty salon with all these like lobe sort of, you know, devices coming across your head.
In the course of time, we encounter many Ferengi gadgets.
Do we?
Yes.
I love it.
I would imagine that the Ferengi lobe washing is a lot like a water pick, you know?
Oh yeah.
Like the just thing that you used to floss. It would be like a water
a lobe
pick for
pick,
the ears.
an
A
ear
lobe
pick.
pick for the
Yeah.
ears. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Back to the operating theater. Braille is giving Wynn the advice just to slow down, you know, let the peace process grow a little before asking for the orbs back. So they're kind of, he's giving her advice. She reluctantly agrees. She leaves and Bashir arrives, and Barile's not in good shape. You know, this is taking a lot out of him. Bashir says the treatment that brought him back to life has also damaged the blood flow in his body. And Bashir says, I want to put you back in stasis for days, weeks, maybe even years. Barile says, no, absolutely not. He wants to help his people. And Bashir says, well, there's this new drug called Vasikin that might help, but it's very dangerous, could kill you. And Barile says, do it. I want that. Bashir says, okay, but he hopes that they won't regret it. Whenever you say, I hope I won't regret this, you're going to regret it. See all these...
It's Murphy's Law.
Exactly.
Now, before we go any further,
sure,
I want to start complimenting my friend Sadiq Al-Fadil.
I agree.
Alexander Sadiq. In that scene, I thought he was wonderfully, wonderfully sympathetic. This is not the Bashir we started the show with.
It's not the young
seasons back. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a compassionate, seasoned professional who knows his job, knows what he can and cannot do, and is enormously sympathetic to the characters, to every characters, not just to Barile, but also to Kira, to even at times he restrains himself with Wynn until he can't restrain himself anymore.
Yeah.
It's actually very wonderful, excellent work by Sadiq or Sid, depending on what you want to call him.
I noticed in this episode his performance really impressed me.
Oh, it's very good. It's
yeah,
very good.
Very, very grounded, very honest,
and
capable.
I'm gonna get to this later on, but very hard. If you listen to the technobabble,
yes,
that he has to spout continually throughout this episode, plus giving an incredible performance, you know, it's a double whammy. He is doing an exceptional job.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Okay, I have the exact age for you right now.
Oh, how
when
old was
he filmed this episode, he was 25.
Oh, okay.
Who?
Nog. Oh. When he filmed it. When it aired January 31st, his birthday is in the beginning of January, he was 26 when they aired this episode.
So, okay, so 31 is off, but yeah. Thank you for that. But still, it's a 25-year-old actor.
And a 15, and a 16, 10 16
year old. Yeah. 8 or 9 years older for sure.
And and the attitudes they're playing are that Jake is more emotionally mature than Nog. So they're, you know, Sirach is playing up in terms of his maturity in real life, and Aaron is playing down there. Yeah.
But it's a good job for both of them, because it's not easy to play up and it's not easy to play down either. Yeah. So good job to both of those actors.
Totally. A little captain's log here, or not
yeah,
captain,
we have a station log.
Commander's log.
Station log. Legate Tyrell has arrived aboard the station to resume negotiations. Vedic Barile suggested that I sit in on the talks as an impartial observer, and Kaiwin has agreed.
Right. Now I want you to think about that. That's the station log.
Yeah.
And what is the very first thing we see next? Do you remember? They're in the conference room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is Sisko lecturing the legate about something. I don't remember exactly. And I thought,
maybe we should redefine your terms, he says. Perhaps there's no. Yeah, he's negotiating.
Yeah,
he's doing
not the impartial negotiator. He's not an impartial observer.
That's true.
I have seen impartial observers. Yeah. It is de rigueur that they keep their mouth shut during negotiations.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
But to me, the dichotomy is he's just said that I'm an impartial observer, and the very next second he's
partial.
Wynn should have had that line.
Yes, Wynn should have had that line.
Huh. She's the one that's getting advice from Barile. She's the one that's invested in this. Yeah, you're right. Good point. Yeah, they're negotiating. Tyrell says that he'll agree in principle to paying for all the Cardassian destruction if the Bajorans agree to return any property of Cardassian origin. Which my mind kept going to the station. You're sitting on a station that's
called. Oh, well, that's the big.
Oh, that's good. That's very good.
Robbie McNeil.
I'm like, guys, what are you thinking? He's telling you what he wants. He wants the station back. No.
Armin, I was not thinking that at all.
No, me either.
I was thinking about Cardassian military vehicles, Cardassian like artillery that's still on the ground.
Well, that's what he talked about, but he said anything of Cardassian origins.
So. And that would be the station. Yeah, that would be the station.
That would have been a
my God, I could have been out of work in 2 or 3 weeks.
Exactly.
Good job.
Excellent job. I wonder if they knew that. I wonder if the
if that was intentional.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was just like, oh my God. You know, when Cisco, come on.
That is the biggest piece of Cardassian. originated material is the station. Should,
you know, when we talk about missing scenes, that's the missing scene.
Oh my God.
Cisco says you're going to send us back to Cardassia. That's huge.
Yeah, it is. Good job, Robbie.
Well, okay. Terrell's trying to pull some, you know, sneaky move here. He wants to take a recess. Wynn and Cisco think Terrell's up to something. Yeah. Yes.
Clearly. And that, again, that's not an impartial observer.
No, it's not.
Mm-mm. You know what? He's a somewhat impartial observer, but that's what he should have been called. A somewhat.
He's a partial impartial.
A partial impartial observer. Yes.
Yeah.
It's all semantics at this
point. Exactly. Yeah. Well, Wynn says she needs Beryl's help. He's the only one that can sort all this out. And she does say here, if Beryl dies, then peace with Cardassia dies with him. So,
but they already have somewhat of a peace treaty. It's not like they're going to go to war. It's just that it won't be.
It's just kind of I did find Wynn's general desperation to have Beryl stay a part of this confusing until later on.
Okay,
when Kira. Yeah. Kind of, you know, when
she
we get
puts
there.
The she puts it together.
She frames it in a way that I'm like, oh yeah, of course that's what's going on.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. At this point, we feel like Wynn really deeply has affection for Beryl and values him and respects him and all that. Not so simple later on.
No, but, she always has an agenda.
That's right. It is a very complex character.
Most definitely. Hey, well, we're in Quark's cafe.
Quark's, finally.
Weren't they supposed to meet at the Klingon restaurant originally? Yeah, but okay. Well, now they're in Quark's cafe. Yeah. Nice dinner. And has no understanding of how to deal with women that are not Ferengi women. Let's just put it that way.
Oh my God. This is an amazing scene.
It was painful. It was like, oh my God.
I love this scene. So funny. Yeah, Aaron just makes a mess of it all.
Oh, my goodness.
He says the females are talking too much.
Yeah.
They should cut up his food for him. And Riska says, you must be joking. And then Aaron has this laugh. There's this awkward pause. And then he has this crazy laugh. Laughs like a crazy person. They all start laughing, thinking, oh, he must have been joking.
Yeah.
And then Aaron goes, she's so dumb. The girls both storm out.
Well, Robbie, add the end to it. He goes, she's so dumb, she's perfect. That's what he likes.
That's
the
right.
Dumbness of it.
That's
of
right.
It.
Yeah. Oh, the girls do not like this. They don't think it's funny. They storm out. Jake is really furious. And then Nog is furious back at him. You're like, wait a minute.
Yes.
How can you be mad? But he's mad.
Yeah. The end of this scene is basically like who can throw the napkin down harder is what it is. There's the napkin on the table, the other napkin on the table, the napkin from Jake onto Nog's body and then Nog back onto the table. So that napkin has more frequent flyer miles than a lot of people in America is what I'm going to say.
I wonder whose bit that was. Somebody must have come up with that bit, the napkin.
It was comical, farcical. I loved it, though. It was great. It was a nice little tag to show that teenage friendships are always fraught with, you know, drama.
Drama.
There's always something happening.
Yeah.
Always. Yeah.
This was the Dawson's Creek storyline of this episode.
Yes, exactly.
It was.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. Right, before you go on, though, Robbie, I just want to make a note of what people thought about, you know, the inclusion of this B storyline.
Sure.
And it's Very interesting. Okay, although the producers were happy with both the A story and the B story as individual stories, they were not happy with their combination in this episode. So according to Ira Stephen Bear, after viewing the first set of dailies, which included scenes from both stories, the producers were beyond shocked, and a feeling swept through the room like, what the hell have we done? The decision to have a grim A story and a humorous B story was Ronald D. Moore's, who explains, I said to everyone, this is such a grim episode, we should have a light B story. Maybe let Jake and Nog do some fun stuff. It sounded great in concept, and I enjoyed writing the scenes, but man, such a mistake. That is their opinion.
I would disagree with that.
That's what I was going to ask you to. Do you disagree?
Absolutely disagree.
You like it.
I love it.
Okay. It's almost to the point where you both feel it was needed to have this light.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. Absolutely.
Right. Got it.
Absolutely.
I mean, going back to my Shakespearean roots, Shakespeare always wrote comic scenes in order to dissipate some of the seriousness of his other scenes. Mm-hmm. It's essential that you have some comic relief.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Really, the two series regulars, two and a half, that are being used here is Sadig and Nana and Avery to some extent. So this gives Jake something to do, mm-hmm. which he normally doesn't get to do. Mm-hmm. And I do think actually the two stories are slightly interrelated.
I think so too.
So I disagree with Ira. It's not the first time I've disagreed with Ira, but and I adore Ira. Mm-hmm. But I think he's wrong in this instance.
I'm with you. I'm with you, Armin. All right, back in the infirmary again. Back to our A story. Barile's getting worse. He's very weak. Mm. He does tell Wynn that this whole issue about Cardassian property was dealt with 4 years ago. And don't worry, he'll still pay the reparations. Don't give in to that. That's already been dealt with. So he clearly is deeply entrenched in these negotiations. He knows a lot about it. You know, Wynn's very grateful for the advice. She leaves. And then Bashir comes to tell Barile the bad news that his organs are failing. Very sad because of this treatment. And wants to get him back into stasis. And Barile says, just get me through the negotiations, whatever it takes. So, Barile's committed to whatever it means for his life. He wants to stay a part of these negotiations.
Well, that's a huge commitment because Barile is basically asking Bashir to replace his damaged organs with mm-hmm. artificial implants at this point. And that's what ends up happening after mm-hmm. this dialogue back and forth between these two. That's huge.
I did like when Barile keeps saying, he says, I'm beginning to dislike seeing that look on your face, doctor, because every time Bashir comes in, he comments on, oh, got some bad news. The look on your face looks like bad news.
Yeah.
And again, kudos to Sid. He doesn't come in with a long face, comes in with sort of a professional face.
And
you know, good for him for not going to the obvious and playing something that is a lot more subtle.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Again, a very good choice on Sid's part.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
agreed.
And before we move on, just
please,
one of the things that I went, okay, he can be forgiven. The writers can be forgiven. He says, just keep me. And we get the impression this negotiation is going to be over in a couple of days, a week, mm-hmm. maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you guys. Perhaps Robbie has been through negotiations. Maybe you have too, Garrett. But when I've sat in on contract negotiations between the unions and the producers, they mm-hmm. go on for months.
Oh, yeah.
So this is a peace treaty. And as we know, Central Command over at Cardassia, you have to talk to them as well. Mm-hmm. We saw that in a previous episode.
What about the Obsidian Order? Are they a part of this too?
I'm sure they are. So this is not something that you wrap up in 45 minutes.
Right.
Yes.
It's true.
That's why I don't know that Barile's this urgency of, you know, yeah, I'm willing to, you know, spend my last 2 days in pain and, you know, probably dying to help when this, you're right, it's not going to be done in a day or two.
Right. Now, on the other
for a long time.
On the other hand, I have known people who force themselves to live, maybe not with the medical help, but force themselves to live in order to get through an event that they wanted. They wanted to get through their daughter's wedding. That they wanted to get through seeing somebody complete a course somewhere. So people can force themselves to live a little bit longer in order to see something that they have great expectations for. I was once at a deathbed, and the doctor leaned over to the surviving spouse and said, "Tell him it's okay for him to die, because he's only sticking around for you."
For you. That sort of, yes, that permission, it would have been such a gift for Wynn to give Beryl the permission to let go.
That's right.
Yeah, he was hanging on hard.
Yeah, I think in a perfect world, Beryl could have had the Bashir give him that vasikan in the very beginning, and at that point, Beryl should have been recording everything he knows about the negotiations so that Wynne can just review it at her leisure later, and then he can go into stasis. You see what I'm
Wait,
saying?
a
It's sort of
minute.
like,
It just occurred to me. Like, doesn't Beryl have a laptop at home or something, or a
of course,
computer? Couldn't he just
he
say
has a
a
pad.
pad? Couldn't Beryl just say, "Hey, Wynn,
When
here's the password for my pad. I'm gonna go in stasis for a little while. Good luck." And just, he's got his notes, he's got all the records. Like, he doesn't physically have to be, We're back in the wardroom. Wynn's studying these pads. Bashir comes in to ask Wynn to do what you were talking about, Armin. Tell Beryl that he can, that you don't
He's
need
not
him.
needed. He's
He's
not
not
needed.
needed. That you can finish the negotiations without him. And she says, "Well, it sounds like you're asking me to lie." This is where Bashir says, "You can do it. You can get all the credit." But this is where Bashir goes, "Oh, wait a minute. I realize that you want a scapegoat. If this fails, you don't want to be left holding the bag for this." So he's really, like, he sees through her complicated motives here, that it's not just the help she wants, but she also wants someone to blame it on if it fails.
And
Yeah.
this
But
is
she,
again extraordinary acting on
yeah,
Sid's
both of
part. He's
Sid,
not both of them,
both of
both of
them.
them. Absolutely. But it is again not the Bashir that we had in the first two seasons.
Absolutely.
No. And then Wynn has that very haunting ending line.
Yes.
I won't interfere. And doctor, I won't forget what you said here. And it's like, what? There she
But
is
he
again.
pushes back because he goes,
Yeah,
"I won't
neither will
forget
I.
either."
No, he does. He stands his own. He stands his, for sure.
We go to Cisco's quarters. It's dinner time. Cisco asks Jake why he and Nog aren't speaking. That Quark has mentioned this to him, and Jake explains that Nog was being super rude to the girls. Leanne's not speaking to him, and Riska, couldn't say two words without him telling her to be quiet. Jake says, "Dad, you were right. Humans and Ferengis are just too different to ever be friends." And Sisko says, "You know what? I think I was wrong about that. You and Nog proved that I was wrong. And you should talk to him, Jake." And Jake says, "Well, he's not going to speak to me." And Sisko says, "Well, you're going to have to do something to get his attention." Which, again, in writer language, I went, "Oh, I can't wait to see what this is."
But
It's like a,
it's still it, I love the fact that this scene tracks the fact that Sisko has changed his opinion on Ferengis from the episode where we meet the Jem'Hadar for the first time and Quark has to come along to Gamma Quadrant. So that's tracking here. He has a changed opinion on that, and he's actually telling his son, that's how Ferengis act, and I don't have a negative feeling about them like I did before, which is nice. I like that.
Do you think that's consistent with Sisko and Quark? Because it
No.
seems like he's got some
No.
warmth. I know, that's what I don't think so either. I think it's nice words to his son in this moment,
Sure it is.
but I don't know that Sisko lives that generally with, maybe with Nog, because he's, his son's friend, but not with the Ferengis in general. I don't think he's.
Well, I don't know about the Ferengi in general, and there's no S on Ferengi, by the way.
That's right.
But But certainly, and to Sisko's credit, Quark does things that you shouldn't be all that fond of him for.
Yeah.
No matter what he is, whether he's a Bolian or a Vulcan or a Ferengi or a human, you shouldn't be very fond of Quark at times.
But he makes a delicious dessert at the end of this
he
episode.
Does.
So.
He does. What a stupid
scene. So I'm very
scene
fond
that
of
is.
Him. It looks like a bunch of munchkin.
Let's talk
donuts.
About that.
Yeah, when we get there,
let's get
we're
there.
Gonna talk
let's,
about that donut,
yeah,
that donut
jump,
pile.
No, don't talk.
Okay.
Let's go.
Back in the infirmary, Wynn's in the infirmary. Baryle, yeah. This is where Baryle's screaming.
Okay.
Screaming in pain.
Okay. I'm not saying that I'd like to see Baryle in pain, but for me,
but
as
you're
an
not
audience
not
member,
saying it.
No. What I am saying is this is the first time that Baryle's had any real true emotion for me. Because he seems
so
he seems
zen.
Like a bump on a log this entire time for the entire run of DS9 so far. No personality, nothing. And here he's clearly emoting.
Big emotion.
Yeah, big emotions.
Well,
yeah.
I will say that when I saw him at this level of emotion in the scene and the agony and stuff, I had flashbacks to the Elephant Man.
Elephant Man.
I
knew
remembered
you
his
that.
Performance. He
yes.
was big emotions in that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, there you go.
So he's capable of it. I think he just
is.
Made a choice to be monk-like.
He made a choice to be
I
Stephen
think
Wright.
So.
Yes,
yeah.
is what he did. So.
I think when he read Monk, that's where he was. His head.
That's
went.
Where he went.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Very pious, very reserved, and very low key, and not Elephant Man like at all. So
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Baryle screaming in pain. Wynn is there, and Bashir rushes in. He's mad about all this. That she's there at all. And Wynn says, well, Baryle called for me. He had some ideas that he wanted to tell me. And Bashir says this Vassican treatment has permanently damaged his brain. It's irreversible.
Yeah.
So Dr. Frankenstein is, it's not working out great for him at this point.
No.
In the commander's office, Bashir says that Baryle may not ever regain consciousness. And Wynn asks Bashir if he can replace the damaged part of the brain with implants like he did for his other organs,
mm-hmm.
Which is just crazy.
Yeah. Turning him into a cyborg.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Kira even supports this. She says Baryle would want this. He'd want to finish what he started. So she's... Yeah, I was a little confused about Kira's.
Yeah, because now she's on board with Wynn.
With Wynn.
She doesn't like Wynn. So now she's agreeing with Wynn.
But there's more to it. I agree with you for the confusion. Yes, there's confusion there. But if you're really thinking about Kira's situation, she wants to do what's best for her boyfriend, for Baryle. Absolutely. Yeah. At the same time, she also wants to respect his desires.
Yeah.
And she also, as a Bajoran, wants peace between Cardassians. There are several factors and agendas playing against her, and it doesn't bother me at all that she sides with Wynn here. Yes, yes, Wynn is not her favorite person on Bajor, but but sometimes you have to align yourself with people you don't like, but to do the right thing, to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, even the last couple lines, like Bashir says, Kira, if I go through this, the man who wakes up may not be the man he used to know. And she says, I know, I realize that. But I know how important this is to him. And I know that he wouldn't want to just be put into stasis. So, yeah, she's explaining why her point of view is complicated. But she does think that this is what Baryle would want. And she's trying to support him. So, yeah. I love this next scene with the Odo. Odo standing there, Jake walks up, and it's the shortest scene in the episode, I think, two lines. But
I thought there were more lines than that. It's definitely just two lines.
Two lines.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Yeah, Odo says, Mr. Sisko. Did they write it that way because you guys said that as a cast?
Oh, no.
Mr.
From the very first episode, Odo was calling Jake Mr. Sisko.
I love Sisko.
It. Okay.
Yeah, it's cool.
Okay.
But Jake says, Odo, I'd like you to do me a favor. I want to be arrested. Very funny. Odo's response, Renee's response was great.
Yeah.
We go into the holding area, the cells. Jake's already in a cell. Odo drags Nog into the brig, blames him and blames Nog and Jake for stealing from this Tholian ambassador. Nog says, "I don't even know what a Tholian looks like." It just makes no sense.
Right.
And then Nog says, "I want my own cell. Do I have to be in there with him?" Odo locks him in with Jake. So, yeah, that was funny. I like this storyline.
Yeah, really so did. Do I. I think Ira's wrong. I think this is a very important storyline.
Okay. I do too.
And meaningful.
Yeah, agreed.
I love Odo's final line. Please feel free to submit a complaint to management. So good.
We go to the infirmary again. Bashir's there. He says he's implanted the positronic brain implants into Beryl. And this is where Kira and Wynn go inside to see Beryl. He's awake, but he's not really all there at this point. Kira holds his hand. He says, "I feel the touch, but it feels like more like a memory of a touch," which I thought was, that captured an idea that was really, it landed for me. This idea.
I agree with you.
Yeah. The way the dialogue was written, it captured a sense of life slipping away and memory slipping away and the things about being alive, being in touch with your senses, the smell, the taste, the touch, the feelings, emotional feelings. Life was slipping away from him. So this idea of like, it's a memory of a touch that I think I'm feeling now.
Which remember what Bashir calls it. He says the spark of life in the brain, that the spark is now being extinguished. Mm-hmm. And they must have given him some data episodes to watch, because to me, he's not doing the Elephant Man. He's doing a slight performance akin to Data. It's a very sort of, as though, it's detached.
Curious,
curious is a good way to put it.
Well, whatever he's doing, Philip Anglim, in my estimation, in this scene, this is his best acting in the entire, every appearance he's had DS9 until now. Because
I think so.
Yeah, not only did he play that sort of Data-esque thing, there's something else going on there where you could see he was holding back some tears as well. So it was a full moment for me to watch Philip Anglim here. So I applaud him for this scene.
Yeah.
It sort of made up for all the times that I, called him the Stephen Wright of Bajoran Vedix. I feel like this was like his crowning moment, and he did
it was really, great. Really good job. And very complicated situation.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Wynn does ask him about the negotiations, and he says he'll do all. He says, "Of course, Eminence, I'll do all I can." And so he's there, I guess, to help whatever Wynn needs in terms of data. Speaking of data, he can deliver data and information, but he's not going to have that spark of life that gives him that creative way of calculating what the moves should be. He's not going to have that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's like AI. We go back to the brig area, the holding area. Nog is pacing. He knows something is off about this. This just doesn't make sense. He knows that Jake is up to something.
Nog did a gumshoe detective here, figuring out.
Actually, that's good writing. They made him a gumshoe detective. He's figuring it out.
Yeah.
And it's not usually Nog reacts to his emotions.
Correct.
And to see him using his mind to figure out a problem is the first step to where his character eventually ends up.
Right.
Interesting.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes.
Well, he's definitely figuring this out. Jake finally admits that, yes, I set you up. Both of us, I set us up. I wanted to talk to you. And Jake says, I forgot that you were a Ferengi. And I love Nock's response. Well, the lobes are usually a dead giveaway. His sort of sincere delivery of that line it just made me laugh out loud. But they do share with each other that, some of your Ferengi habits disgust me, Jake says. And Nog says, some of your human habits disgust me too.
Yeah.
But they don't want to lose their friendship.
And I would have loved to have heard what those human habits were.
I know.
We got a couple of Ferengi habits.
We do, but
we didn't hear any human habits.
No. I mean, we get a little bit more Ferengi.
He does say you treated the women like equals. That disgusts him.
Right. Yes,
maybe that's, maybe it's stuff like that.
But when he says treating them with that respect, it made me sick. And Jake's like, oh, you want to talk about sick? Sick is making Riska cut up your food for you. And Nog goes, at least I didn't have her chew. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, we did not know about that either.
No, I did not know about that.
I thought that was that from the beginning. Okay, yes.
We know that the women are naked and that they're at home.
That's what you remember, the nakedness. But there are other things.
I didn't remember about the chewing of the food as if they were a mama bird to the baby bird is what
exactly.
It is.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Wow. Well, they agree that they will have no more double dates together, that's a smart move, and that they'll deal with things that annoy them as they come up. And then I love at the end, they call for Odo to let them out.
That was very funny.
Very funny. They call for Odo. First Jake calls. And then he says something like, what does he say? Oh, he's just joking or something. Oh, he's just playing around. And then they both together call, Odo!
Odo! Can we just go back to the chewing of the food? Let's just skip. Okay. I'm just imagining our respective partners. So we're talking about Kitty, Rebecca, and Megan doing that for disgusting. Us. Like, it's just like, as much as we love and care about our partners, I don't think any of us would ever, ever allow them to chew our food and then we eat it afterwards. Oh my God.
Well, I'm absolutely certain Rebecca would never do it.
She wouldn't do it. Yeah, she wouldn't even
chew your own food. No.
Kitty has never chewed my food for me, but on occasion when I'm not capable, she has cut my food for me.
Oh, she has.
Oh. That's nice.
When I've had some sort of physical damage in a hand or something,
right?
Yeah. And she'll cut the food for me.
Rebecca does peel my grapes for me, but I don't.
Whoa, think that's too much. No,
she does not.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Station log.
Yeah. Station log supplemental. Kai Winn has announced that Legate Tyrell has signed the peace treaty. The news has sent a shockwave throughout the quadrant. And although there is still some opposition from hardline elements on both Bajor and Cardassia, it looks as though they're finally willing to put their long conflict behind them. Yay! This is a momentous occasion. Yes.
Yeah, well, let's have a party in the war room about it.
Why don't we see it?
Yes, we don't see it.
We don't.
This is my only problem with the episode, really.
Really?
You wanted to see the signing of the treaty?
I want to see, because I've been part of negotiations, I wanted to see Kai Winn do whatever she has to do to get this.
Okay.
It happened. The whole thing is about this negotiation, and then, we got it.
It happened. Yeah, Beryl just sacrificed his life. But it happened off camera.
We got it.
So if you have that feeling, then I had that same feeling when they're doing surgery on Beryl's head. Because in this day and age, in 2024, we would have seen the actual brain being operated on. But everything was from
it was all that from one an angle,
side angle, and he's pushing into the hair.
Well, because Reza was using the wrong prop.
Oh, that's right. Reza had the wrong prop.
If he'd used the right prop, he could have come around on the back.
Could have seen it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're having a party in the wardroom. Dax tries to help Bashir feel better. She does say that, you kept Beryl alive against all odds. I think this is Terry's only scene.
This is her only scene. This she is had her a whole residual week off. Scene. Oh, yeah. She was so happy this episode. Yeah.
Quark does bring in this amazing dessert, which I mentioned earlier. He brings it in to show Kai Winn.
Kai Winn.
He goes over to her. She says, Kai Winn, meet Kai Winn. You've named the dessert, the Kai Winn. But it did look like little donut balls all piled up with frosting or something, which I think you described the frosting as tongue sauce.
Halligian tongue sauce. Yeah. Right. Halligian tongue sauce. Yeah. When you said in honor of on the occasion, I've named my latest creation after you. And before you said it's a chocolate souffle, I thought you were saying a big hump of steaming poop, because that's what you're full of. You're full of poop. It's what I thought you were going to say, but you didn't.
Well, I believe this is the first and maybe the only time that Louise and I actually had a moment together.
Oh, and you're friends and too.
We're very good friends.
Yeah.
And I can sort of see that in the subtle body language between the two of us.
Yeah.
So I was very pleased to have something to do with Louise.
Oh,
great lady, Louise.
It's like you have your own personal Easter eggs in this scene. You see your nice. Body language, her body language, after knowing her for so many years. I love it.
And she, instead of being disgusted until I leave, and then she plays it right. But
right.
There is a sort of, thank you, Armin. I can see it in her eyes.
Yeah. That's funny.
And then when Armin leaves, then she goes back to character.
Yeah. Yeah.
That reminds me of, we had an episode of Voyager where I had a guest star named Willie Garson, and Willie was an old friend from New York, and we just had so much fun that when Garrett and I rewatched that episode, I'm like, oh, that's just me and Willie. Like, I can see we're not really playing the scene. We're playing other stuff, but
to make it even more relevant, it's like the scene when Jonathan Frakes came on and Terry, not Terry, Nanah turns to him and sees him, and exactly. That look is like, hey, it's Frakes. That's the look we saw. It was not like, hey, what is his damn name? I've already forgotten his character name.
Riker.
Yeah. So she's not saying like, hey, it's Riker. It's literally, hey, it's Frakes is what we saw. So
yes, exactly.
I love it.
Yeah. So you got the dessert. I like that you're selling a lot of them, that you can't keep up with the demand on this Kai Wynn dessert with the tongue sauce is very popular.
Well, she's a big hero now on Bajor.
Yes, exactly. We do get a call from the nurse, medical emergency. We cut down to the
nurse Jabara. Nurse Jabara.
Nurse Jabara.
Played by Anne Gillespie. Let's give her her
yes.
Yeah.
We're in the infirmary. Kira is Kira's desperate. So Nanah played this scene beautifully. Desperate, brokenhearted.
Yeah.
She wants Bashir to replace the other part of Barail's brain. And Bashir says, no, this has to end. This has to end now.
Right.
Can't do this anymore.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't want to remove the very last shred of humanity that Barail has left.
Exactly.
That's the line.
That spark.
And it makes, that little spark right there. Yeah. Yes. Because he will be an android at that point. If you think about it, there's nothing that it's that's him originally, except for the exterior, what you see. That's it.
Yeah. Wynn is also in this scene. Wynn does say, it's time to listen to Dr. Bashir, child. Mm-hmm. Kira's... doesn't back to not liking Wynn. She says, you know, you've got your place in history now. You're fine. You don't need Barail anymore. Mm-hmm. And Wynn does leave. And
is that on do you have the script, Robbie? The original video?
I can get it.
I'm just curious if that was a direction in the actual script where she puts her hand on his chest to say goodbye, or if that was Louise
All
Fletcher
right.
doing
Talk
that.
Amongst yourselves and I will
okay,
go.
Thank
look.
You. Just
It'll
curious.
Take me a moment. Yeah, very sweet scene, though. Super great performance by Nanah.
Yeah.
Well, in a sense, at least this would be occurring to me, may not have occurred to her, but this is an actor she's worked with on several episodes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We know he's not coming back.
Yeah.
And so you're saying, in a nice way, goodbye to someone that you have worked with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How you feel about that person overall, it's neither here nor there. It's simply saying, thank you, goodbye. You know, it was nice working with you.
Right.
Yeah. I remember when I did I did the show Chuck, the spy comedy show. And we, in our last season, our very last scene, I intentionally scheduled the entire cast that we always had this like conference room where everybody would gather and try to solve the spy, you know, mystery. And so I put that scene where everyone was in the scene, I put it at the very end of the schedule. So that would be the last scene that we would do of the series. And then I said to them as we rehearsed the scene, I said, I'm going to do close-ups of everybody first. And I'm going to do the wide shot last. And I'm only going to do it once. And that one take will be the last take of this series. So I made it. I kind of built it up. It was a little dramatic. Mm. And I remember I set up this wide shot, which I don't think we could use because everybody was crying. They were all.
I was there, Robbie. with you.
You were there, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
And yeah,
remember?
They were very emotional.
Very emotional. And Chris Della Penna, our first AD,
yeah,
when he got to call a rap, you know, the AD is the one that announces yeah. rap. He's like, yeah. He came up to me. Chris goes, and he's
not an emotional guy. That's for
he's
sure.
He's not an emotional yeah, like guy. That, he's a logical.
Yes.
And he got really emotional. He goes, can I call rap? Can I call rap? On? And I was like, yeah, Chris, you. And he goes, ladies and gentlemen, he's the first AD. Ladies and gentlemen, it's my honor to call a series rap. And he's crying. It was
That's
very
sweet. That's
it was
yeah.
very sweet.
Yeah.
So yes, to back to your cure, you know, yeah. Nana saying goodbye to a fellow
yeah.
actor, whether
yeah.
Yeah, she spent a lot of time with him. I'm
That's
sure
right.
It was very emotional.
Did you find it, the script?
I did. It does okay. not have a suggestion. It says she says Wynn says, believe me, child, I share your pain, but I think the prophets are calling to Beryl. She looks at Beryl. I will see to it that Bajor never forgets him. And she leaves.
And she leaves. So she didn't
yeah.
touch him in the script. Okay.
Nope.
So that was Louise doing that then.
Yeah. No. Sure.
All right.
Or Reza. One or the other.
Or Reza. Yeah.
Yes.
And then the final monologue is very sweet too that Kira has. She speaks to the unconscious Beryl, right? Starting with, you got your treaty. And then she talks about how she first met him.
Mm-hmm.
And she talked about how he got on her nerves because there was such a calmness about him when she saw him. And then she says, well, then I got to know you and I realized you're just as confused as the rest of us. You just accepted your confusion better than anyone I've ever known. That's when I realized I loved you.
She and, says, I loved you.
Yeah. Then it goes back.
Yeah, this is the last words of the episode. Yes.
Yeah.
And it's that nice pullback with the executive producer's
the EP's names right there.
And Reza gets another episode.
Okay.
There we go.
It was
very nice work at the end by Kira.
Yes.
But when I look back on this episode, I don't see Kira as one of the main focuses in this episode. It's strange
it's
to
odd.
Me. It's odd. The focus is Beryl. The focus is Wynn. The focus is Jake, of course.
Bashir.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sorry. Absolutely, yeah. Bashir. But not so much Kira.
No.
She's there. And in a lot of scenes, you see her standing behind Wynn with nothing to say.
With nothing to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's strange. I would have loved to have seen much more scenes with Bashir and Kira.
Right.
Where she's arguing the medical side of, you know, Wynn's arguing one medical side. Maybe Kira's arguing a different angle, but very emotional and very personal. I don't know. Yeah. It was odd that Kira has this last emotional moment, but she's barely, you know, contributing before that.
Victim of the 42-minute format. All right.
Yeah.
So here is a little bit of tidbit of information for both of you.
Mm-hmm.
After this episode aired, the producers received an extremely angry email from a group calling themselves the Friends of Vedic Beryl.
Oh my God.
The email angrily protested the death of Beryl, and enclosed were pictures of a memorial service they had held for him.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
And if any of them are listening to our podcast, they probably don't like me because I've always been bagging on Beryl since day one.
I think they were as emotional about Beryl as Chris Della Penna was about calling rap on
Clearly.
Chuck. That
Clearly.
They were as upset.
They pulled a Chris Della Penna. They did.
And yet, again, I will repeat something I said before.
Yeah.
To me, some of the bravest things that writers can do is to kill off of a beloved character.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That all of a sudden makes the show much more believable and gives you the feeling that, well, if they can kill that person off, they could mm-hmm. kill this person off. They could kill. Then all of a sudden, when those characters are in jeopardy, there is jeopardy. As opposed mm-hmm. to thinking, oh, well, that's number one on the call sheet. He's never going to die. Or she's never
Game
gonna
of
die.
Thrones did that beautifully. Game of Thrones, they would kill somebody every other episode.
Oh, my
Major
gosh.
Major characters.
GEICO makes it easy to get affordable renter's insurance in as little as 90 seconds. And then you'll start to wonder why everything else isn't so fast. Like, why does it take so long to do the dishes? A meal that's gone in 3 requires 45 minutes worth of dishes. Doesn't make sense. But it does make sense to get renter's insurance through GEICO. That way, that pile of dirty dishes and the other things you love are covered. Get more with GEICO.
Well, let us talk about our theme, lesson, moral of this episode, starting with Robbie, then Armin, then myself.
I wrote down the lesson for me is sometimes there's something that's bigger than a single person, and that's the true hero's sacrifice. That's what Brielle did. It was bigger than his own. He was willing literally to die to be helpful to his people and the cause, you know, that was bigger than himself.
Yeah. Very true.
I'm of the same vein, slightly worded differently. Mm-hmm. Every person's fate is in their own hands, and each must decide what's important to them. So in this case, it's Beryl's life and the mm-hmm. peace treaty. And for the B story, it's for Jake saying, my friendship with Nog is possibly more important or equally as important as having a date with Leanne.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Each person must decide their own fate.
Yes. Yeah. That's even same idea, even better said than I said it. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Very well said. Yes, I have two lessons. My lesson from the B storyline is that money is money, but women are better. Then my other lesson is from the A storyline. And that's from the very final speech that Kira has to at the very end of the episode. And that is that we're all confused. And it's just a matter of how well we are able to handle that confusion. How well are we able to accept that confusion is what it's all about. That's it.
Yeah.
That's mine.
Yeah. Well said.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah.
Well said.
The Patreon poll theme, yes. Lesson, moral of this episode is submitted by Sherry Kidner. And that is sometimes you just have to let go.
Mm. Is that about the A story or the B story?
That's probably...
I think that's about everything. I like that. I mean, letting go yeah. of control of outcomes is yes. a great lesson in general.
For sure.
You can apply that to... I can apply that to this podcast. Letting yes. go of outcomes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish I could do that when I'm on a plane. I wish I could just let go.
That's right. It's tough for you. We forgot about that. Tough. Yeah. 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 So yeah, that's a lesson that you keep having to incorporate, yes. I guess, right? Letting go when you get on that plane. Okay. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in to our recap and discussion yes. of Life Support. And thank you again for our lovely co-host, Armin. Thanks, Armin.
Thanks, Armin.
Thank yeah. you.
And join us next time when we will be recapping and discussing the Deep Space Nine episode, Heart of Stone. And that will be with Armin yet again.
Yay.
Looking forward to that. Most definitely. For all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned to your bonus material. And for everyone else, we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.